Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. I'm at the live episode 142. We got a lot to talk about tonight. A lot going on. First thing I want to say is peace and prayers to the family of George Floyd, the man that was killed by the Minneapolis cop earlier this week. We're going to dedicate this show to him. And hopefully this police brutality thing, we can get this under control as a nation, you know. But I'm saying we can do as our part. You know, we can't turn peaceful rallies into an opportunity to loot. We can't do that. And we use peaceful rallies as a reason to loot and cause mischief and things like that. So, you know, we're going to have a good show tonight. We got a lot to talk about. Hopefully everybody can hear me. I was having some technical difficulties earlier, but I think I should be good to go. I'm just waiting on my man Keys to jump in. We got a lot to talk about. We got on Tyron Woodley versus Gilbert Burns tomorrow night on ESPN. Finally, the UFC is putting some on free TV. Finally. Hopefully, we're going to get we're gonna get some clarification in the bantamweight division this weekend also. You know, there's a lot of bantamweight fights jumping off this weekend. So there's a lot going on. So the bantamweight picture should clear up. It's kind of funny how most of the top dogs in the bantamweight division have fights, except the number one guy, Marlon Moraes, which kind of jumped out to me this week that basically everybody in the top 10 has a fight, except Marlon. Really don't know what's going on with that. And then he's not fighting for the interim belt. They have Aldo fighting for the interim belt, which is kind of ridiculous to me. There's no way Aldo should be fighting for the belt. Then the UFC going to put him in the top five after he coming off a loss. So they put him at number six to probably justify him having to fight for the vacant bantamweight belt. But, you know, this card tomorrow, I'm looking at it right now. None of the fights really jump out to me, except the main event. Mackenzie Dern is fighting tomorrow. Shevchenko and Chukagan is fighting tomorrow. I really don't know most. I think that's Tim Elliott. Yeah, I think Tim Elliott. No, I don't think that's Tim Elliott. But, because that's flyweight division. But, you know, there's free fights tomorrow. UFC is back on. They're fighting all the Vegas out of the Apex Center. So, you know, hopefully we get some good fights tomorrow. I know that the main event should be a banger. So, definitely looking forward to that. I'm quickly becoming a fan of Gilbert Burns. I really think he's a well-rounded fighter as far as he can grapple. He can stand up, he can defend. So Tyron Woodley might have his hands full tomorrow. I don't know if Woodley wins this fight, does that justify him getting a title shot? But we'll see how it goes, because we never know how the matchmaking is going in the UFC, because it seems to be no rhyme or reason to how they are setting up fights nowadays. It used to be they set up fights or made fights according to the ranking system. And as of late, I just think they do fights to satisfy the casual fan. And what I mean by the casual fan is that somebody that maybe don't know too much about the sport, but they heard of a name. So just because you know a name, you know, they might decide to check out a fight. So But we'll see how it goes, because Usman, really, everybody's been turning down a fight with him. Masvidal basically turned down a fight with him. Somebody else turned down a fight with him. I can't remember who it is right now. But the thing is with Usman is that, you know, after he beat Woodley, he was injured, had to have surgery. And then he fought Colby Covington. And then after he fought Colby, I guess he was injured again. So basically in this division, it seems like every champion fights, get injured, and is out, and then comes back. So basically you'll be lucky to have a champion fight twice a year. And that was Woodley's MO, if you ask me. But Keys will say, he'll tell you something different because he's a Woodley fan. And he'll say Woodley dominated and all this. But we'll see how it go, man. But I'm hoping for a good main event tomorrow. I'm hoping for a good main event tomorrow because you got two guys that can go and that can put on a hell of a fight. So that said, it's probably the only fight on the card that I really care about is the main event. There's no other fights on the card that I'm really looking forward to. But normally when you say that, those cards normally turn out to be the sleeper cards of the year. Yeah. And we'll go back and be like, oh, my God, that fight night at the Apex was so awesome because they had this finish. They had this many knockouts or submissions, and it'll just be like a standout. But what's up, Keys, man? How you doing tonight, bro?
Is it happening at the Apex?
Yeah, it's at the Apex, sir.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that they had switched over to that. I heard about it, that they were thinking about going to the Apex, but I didn't know that it was – I didn't know where it was happening, because I just assumed it was going down somewhere in the world, but I didn't know. I mean, that's cool. I mean, I'm good, bro. And it's just enjoying this Friday. It's that Friday vibe like we always have. Those Friday shows always hit a little bit different, so it's going to be no different tonight. That's how I'm feeling.
Yeah, man, because I thought they was having this card in Jacksonville, but then Dana said then something came up where they couldn't get Jacksonville, so they really didn't know where they was going to have this fight at, actually, I think, to last week.
Yeah, I was confused. Sorry about that. I was confused, too, because it just said to be determined. You had the location was to be determined, and at one point the whole fight card was to be determined. So I wasn't sure if there was really even going to be a fight. It seemed like they only had the main event at one point, and there was really no card. And then all of a sudden the card came out, and apparently a location was found. So it looked like it was up in the air for a minute. They weren't sure. And I thought at first that tomorrow's card was supposed to happen last weekend at first. I thought they were planning for May 23rd instead of May 30th. But I could be wrong on that. If I'm right, I think it was because they were unsure about where they were going to be able to host fights at, because I think the Jacksonville, I don't know what exactly happened with it, but I think that it timed out. You know, they couldn't do – I know they were talking about Vegas too. I know that they want to get to Vegas in the near future, and they want to host some fights in Vegas. But I think there was just a lot of stuff that was up in the air and not confirmed. So it was not sure if they'd even have a card. But luckily we have one, and we're gonna get to see the most dominant welterweight on the planet is gonna fight in the main event, and it's gonna be a great night.
Oh, boy, here we go. Yeah, so Tyron Woodley is making his return to the Octagon after it's been a while since Woodley fought, since he fought Kamaru Usman. It's been a while. He did have a scheduled fight against Leon Edwards that, you know, that was canceled due to the pandemic. But, you know, he's back in Octagon tomorrow in the main event going against the upstart Gilbert Burns. I think this fight is going to be a good fight. I think Gilbert Burns is, you know, I think he, if Tyron comes in there and underestimate Gilbert, Tyron could walk out of there with a loss. I think Tyron needs to keep the fight on his feet. Don't hire Gilbert. I mean, Tyron is a world-class wrestler. You know, he says he can wrestle, but we really haven't seen it in a while. But Burns can really grapple. He's a jiu-jitsu guy. Actually, he was one of the coaches in the Ultimate Fighter. So I think Woodley should stay inside his wheelhouse, keep the feet on his, keep the fight on his feet, and take his chances that way.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how, you know, anyone who listened to the show know I'm a big, well, Woodley's like my second favorite fighter. So, but if you listen to the show, you know I obsess a little bit. Not to a level where it's weird, but you know, I definitely, I mean, what I'm saying is that I'm interested.
He is the president of the Tyron Woodley fan club, people.
Yes,
that's what he's trying to say.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get to, but I couldn't figure out how to word it. But that was a good I think that was spot on. I'm just interested to see how and the Woodley fan club continues tomorrow night, by the way. So where you feel like I already came in here tonight and it's already began, it's gonna continue tomorrow night and on next week's show, you know, pending the how the fight goes. You know, I do give him a good shot at winning the fight. But what now speaking of that, what I'm interested to see is how he will approach this fight. Now, was his Usman title fight, was that in 2018 or 2019?
Man, let me look it up because it's been a while. It's been a while.
I really forget.
That was in March 2nd, 2019.
Okay. So he's had like a year and almost 3 months.
Almost 15 years.
So he's had 15 months off. Well, Didn't McGregor take 15 months off?
Yeah, Conor took like 18. I think it was 18 months between the Floyd fight and the Khabib fight. But if you look at between MMA fights, it was almost two years. It was like 2 years of change.
Because the Floyd fight was August 2017, and then the Khabib fight wasn't until October 2018. So you have like a year and 2 months right there. So a good 14 months. And then the Khabib fight was October, and then the Cowboy fight wasn't until January 2020. So you really have a year and, yeah, I think it's 15 months. So that's the same times table Woodley has taken between the Usman fight and this fight tomorrow, 15 months. Now, in terms of the ring rust, it's, you know, one of the guys that was advocating against ring rust, saying that it was all in your mind, Dominic Cruz was saying that ring rust wasn't a thing, and then he got finished in his fight versus Henry Cejudo, so I don't really know what that says about his claim about ring rust, whether that proves him wrong or it proves him right. But Woodley versus this guy, I'm interested to see. I mean, I don't think it's the same times table where you only take a year and change off. I don't think it's the same thing as where Cruz took off like a good 3-4 years and then came back, I feel like that's a lot more significant of a layoff than a year and change. Because if you really look at it, a lot of these guys fight once a year anyways. And me and you never really been a fan of that. We like when guys will fight, you know, at least 2 times a year. I think 2 times a year is even good enough for me. I mean, I don't mind if they fight 3 times a year, but I understand that, you know, people have lives and things like that. But anyways, I don't really know if a year and change really makes that much of a impact, where a lot of these guys fight once a year. They train to fight once a year anyways, and they look the same in all their fights. So I don't really think that will change much for Woodley. Do you think ring rust will affect him?
Well, I'm looking at his record, and between the time he fought Damian Maia and the time he fought Darren Till, that was like 13 months, almost 14 months. Because he fought Damian Maia July 29th, 2017, and then he fought Darren Till September 2018. So basically, if you really look at it, from the time he won the belt in July 2016 to the time he lost the belt in March of 2019, you say he was the most dominant, but he only fought 6 times.
6 times, and what was the total time that he was the champion?
That's almost, because he won the belt July 30th, 2016. He lost it March 2nd, 2019. So that's like 3.5 years.
Well, no, so it'd be a little under 3 years, because you would have, so July 2016, and then you go
that's
March
why, that's
2019.
Why, that's why, yeah. It'd be like two,
so it'd be,
2.5, like, or?
Yeah, it's like maybe two years and 7 months, or 2 years, 8 months. Probably.
Yeah, 2 years, 8 months.
Yeah, so he didn't make it to the 3 years as champion, but and you're saying he only fought 6 times in the 2 years and 8 months. Well, my thing to that is most guys might have only fought 2 times, maybe 3 times in that span of time.
But that's an issue, man. I mean, to me, I think me and you talked about this one time before. Let's say you fight in December, right? Normally a fight camp is, what, 6 to 8 weeks, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's say you come out of the fight and you need an additional month to get yourself together. You still should be able to fight at least 3 times a year, man. Am I out of pocket for thinking that, or?
I mean, I think it's. I mean, I don't know. You know, for me, we've been in the same boat with this for a while. I don't know what the, you know, there seems to be a lot of variables. I mean, one thing that we just figured out is that a lot of people, you know, thought that, like, for example, Khabib, people thought that Khabib was only fighting once a year because he doesn't fight during Ramadan, which really doesn't even make any sense, because Ramadan is only like a couple weeks long. It's only a couple weeks long, excuse me. Ramadan is only, I think, about a month max.
It's a month long because I was over there during Ramadan one time.
Yeah, and it ends before June 1st. I'm pretty sure it already ended.
Well,
you know, a couple
it's different
days,
times,
or if not a week.
It comes different times of the year. Because, like, this year, I want to say it was, what, June, July, or May.
It was in
June.
May.
And then when I was over there, it was in September.
Okay, so
it was September into October.
So all I'm saying is that it seems to vary for different fighters depending on what is important to to them. You know, Khabib only fights once a year, and a lot of people for a while thought that was because he doesn't fight during the summer, because Ramadan usually takes place during the summer. But it was made, it's almost as if we're talking about Ramadan takes up his entire summer, which I would question, because it's only a couple weeks long. So I don't really understand why,
exactly.
For example, he can't fight Justin Gaethje for the undisputed title. They can't unify the belts by, let's say, August. I don't understand why they can't fight by August. Now, because they're saying September. I mean, maybe he wants a longer training camp. I mean, if it's the end of May and you've been and they fast during Ramadan, right?
Yeah, from sunup to sundown.
So I would think that his body is a lot different because he's been fasting. So maybe he probably doesn't train during – I mean, I don't know. I would think he doesn't train as much during Ramadan.
Yeah,
so
I would say
if you,
I would say he probably don't train during Ramadan. And I would probably say that he's not taking in the amount of food he should during Ramadan, because, like I said, they don't eat or drink between sunup and sundown. So – and then over there in the summer months, the sun could come up anywhere between 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and not go down to like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. So it ain't like a typical, let's say, our summer here, you know, in the States, where we know the sun going to be up by 5 and down by 8:30, you know, like that. It's kind of different over there.
Well, I mean, back to the main thing. All these fighters have different reasons why they don't want to fight.
Yeah.
But one thing that I wanted to get to before I get too lost in it, because we do get very deep into that topic. One thing that I wanted to get to, and I meant to hit the ground running with it at the start, but I'll just do it now, is what is all this John Jones and Dana White going back and forth about the negotiations for the Francis Ngannou fight? They apparently sat down and discussed what it would take to get John Jones to make the move to heavyweight division, to take his first fight versus to move to the heavyweight division is already one thing, but then to also take his first fight will be versus Francis Ngannou, who's arguably the number one contender in the heavyweight division.
I don't think that's arguable.
And it's not arguable that Ngannou is the number one contender?
Nah.
All right, well, that's okay. So even if he's not the number one contender, the point is that John Jones and Ngannou were having a back and forth on Twitter, because during the OSP and Ben Rothwell fight a couple of weeks ago, John Jones tweeted after OSP lost the decision to Ben Rothwell that, and by the way, I think OSP looked pretty good at heavyweight, just for the record.
Yeah, I thought he looked good too.
So after that, John Jones tweeted saying how surreal it was to be watching OSP, and it relates to him because a guy that he's fought at light heavyweight. How crazy it was to be watching OSP fight at heavyweight, and while he was watching it, he was saying how he was picturing himself fighting at heavyweight. And Francis Ngannou responded to it and saying, you know, how real was it to you? And you know, John said it was very real, and, you know, all that power isn't going to do anything against me and all that. And, you know, Jones said how he's fought more technical strikers than Ngannou. And things like that, which is valid in my opinion. But so they wanted to have the fight. They tried to get the negotiations, and now Dana White is saying that there's a big scuffle on social media, because Dana White is saying that John Jones first came out and said that the negotiations went bad, and the UFC, you know, they shot him down on his the offer or whatever it was. They shot it down. And the negotiations couldn't have went
any worse. You know, he said things like that. And apparently they weren't willing to give him a, you know, a pay raise to go to heavyweight, whatever the pay raise was. We don't really know. But then Dana White came out and said that John basically said John Jones is lying. But then Jones said that Dana was lying. And now, so they're both saying each other was lying about how the negotiations went. And then Dana White was on video, and the press asked him what happened. And Dana White said, I have text messages from John Jones, you know, that I could use as proof to show you that I'm not lying, but I'm not going to take it there and put him out there like that. But he was like, I have a quote from, I think he said, I have a quote from my lawyer, of what he said to my lawyer, and he said that he wants what Deontay Wilder got for his last fight.
And then John came out and said, well, how your lawyer put the text messages out? Publicize them there. If you have it, he said, I'll give you permission to publicize them. Put them out there. He said, I didn't even ask for half of what Deontay Wilder made. And Deontay Wilder made $30 million in his last fight. So if you say half or half of that, so half of that is 15, then half of that is 7.5. So we got a caller in. Let me jump the caller in real quick. Yo, 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 what's up? Who is this?
Hey, guys, it's Evan.
What's up,
man?
Evan?
How you guys doing?
How you doing?
Good.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to get to this, and then, Evan, you can jump in after me. He'll catch on when he heard my answer.
All right.
The UFC has an issue with compensation right now, and this is not a problem that's going to go away. This problem is only going to get worse. I guarantee you it's only going to get worse, because when you think about it, Zuffa is worth $1.6 billion. And that's just their worth. Then they made all that money on the ESPN contract. And then Dana White is worth $500 million, and he's not even a fighter. So where is the money going? The fighters pay their trainers. They pay for their own camps. They normally pay for their own travel and all that good stuff. The UFC might put them up in a hotel and all that good stuff. But most of the expenses are paid for by the fighter. So with that being said, John Jones, basically his contract says he makes $500K per fight. And I think that me, you, and Evan talked about Cerrone base pays him $200,000 a fight. I don't know whether or not they get a bonus if they win, you know, whether or not they get a show or whatever. But I think John gets $500,000. Now, they said that DC, I read this somewhere, DC made $4 million for the Derrick Lewis fight. Now, let's think about the situation with the Derrick Lewis fight. Derrick Lewis had fought less than 30 days earlier, and DC had been off about 3 or 4 months, 3 months, I think, at least 3 months. The UFC, I guarantee you, is going to have the issue, and I wouldn't be surprised if the fighters go on strike or something like that, or they revolt against the UFC. Because Sean O'Malley, who's really not even that big of a star, but he does have a little bit of a following, said he will not fight big names until he starts to get paid for it. Now, I've been saying for a while that the UFC fighters need to unionize. Because the only way you can evoke change is by unionizing. If you come up with, like, the Major League Baseball Players Association, the NBA Players Association, things like that, that's the only way that this will change. But fighters are individual contractors, so in a way they're kind of selfish to a fault, because basically they in it to get as much as they can out of it. Until a big name fighter takes the UFC to war over this, then it'll just be status quo. And my thing is, I know John Jones ain't the greatest person outside the cage, but I think right now, John Jones might be the person that sparked this change.
So what I'm trying to, so what I think might be, maybe they should just go ahead and do that, is maybe Dana White should release the text messages that he claims to have. It's kind of hard because, you know, John Jones and Dana White, I'm a big Dana White guy. You know, if Dana White was not, you know, I've taken some serious consideration into this, and I've realized if Dana White was not the president of the UFC, it may take away a lot of my interest to watch the UFC. If there was a president, but either way, so Dana White and John Jones, both two guys who, regardless of if you like them or not, are kind of have made a reputation for themselves where they're kind of hard to believe what they say, because John Jones has let down his fans so many times, and he's made these types of not promises, but he's made these kind of turnarounds, and then after making the turnarounds, kind of let his fans down again. So it's kind of hard to put faith into him. And at the same time, it's hard to put faith into Dana, because we just know he's lied about a lot of things. He usually says that fight's not booked, or that's not the fight we're looking at, and then that ends up being the fight they're looking at. You know, there's been many cases like that. So both of them are kind of not really that much of trustworthy guys as a fan, if in my opinion. But whether you like them or not will dictate whether you put trust into them naturally. And but I think maybe it does go that way. Maybe Dana White has to put out the text messages that he claims, because it seems like Jones, it's good that Jones is just going to sit back and say, hey, if you don't want to pay me, then I'm just going to fight Jan Blachowicz and I'm going to fight Jan Blachowicz, and that's the way we're going to go with it, because you can't ask for these big, you know, super fights and not be paying, you know, not be compensating us the right way. And same for Sean O'Malley.
Evan?
Yes, sir.
What's your take?
So, before I go off on a rant of a bunch of rambling, the whole, like, this main topic is just of, like, fighters basically getting unpaid, correct?
Yes.
Well, so, but the main course of the topic, though, is John Jones and Ngannou's failed negotiations for a super fight. That was the initial thing that I asked about, and then it kind of dips into a larger pool of compensation across the board. But, yeah, Jones and Ngannou's super fight.
So, with the Jones and Ngannou super fight, if Jones is only making $500,000 right now during like all of his title defenses, that's already, you know, ridiculous in its own. I've made comments about this throughout all, you know, all MMA pages anywhere. I think all champions, immediately when you become a champion, your base pay has to be $1 million, and then you just work on like bonuses and getting additional things. But $1 million should be a flat rate, and just that's it.
Yeah, Evan.
Because the way I see it is that your champion is your marketing tool. Like, that's who goes on the radio shows and does the promotion and talks about you as a company and as an organization. If you're not paying them well, when if a radio show asks you, oh, do you get paid well? No, not at all. Shevchenko, just not to ramble too much, but Shevchenko, I think, made $100,012 for her title defense against Caitlin Chookagian. $100,000, and you're a world champion,
yeah,
and arguably
That's
the biggest
horrible.
Promotion in the UFC? Kidding me? Come on. And she absolutely murks women. And she murks dudes, too. But regardless, back to the topic. I think – I like what you guys were saying about Jones possibly being the one that starts the fire of, like, fighters getting together and starting some sort of union or just something. Because, no, I agree all across the board. I think – I think, for one, I think boxing gets paid too much. I know that's an argument on its own. But then again, Jones asking for $30 million, so probably a little too much because, you know, $30 million is like a Conor McGregor number. But $5 million? That's reasonable. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
I'm looking up Valentina's paycheck against Caitlin. She actually made $500,000 plus if she got a bonus or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like what you said though. Her guaranteed purse is only $115,000.
Yeah.
So she got $115,000. Plus $115,000 for winning, and then she got it wasn't even $500,000, and she got a $40,000 bonus. So she only made $270,000.
There you go.
I don't think Jones asked for $30 million, man. I'm just saying.
No.
Me personally, if I had to fall on a sword, I'll fall on the sword and say he didn't ask for that amount of money. I probably think he probably asked for somewhere probably $5 million just to say he made more money in one fight than DC did, because DC did make $4 million when he fought Derek Lewis. So I think that's how petty John would be, to say if he made one more million than DC. But my whole thing is this. Like Evan said, your champions are the face of your company. Your champions are the ones that normally headlines pay-per-views, the ones that are being requested to do interviews, the ones that we normally write articles about, that we talk about on shows like this. And to say that Valentina only made $270,000, and needless to say, she's probably, what, the number one pound for pound, or number one or number two pound for pound fighter, UFC woman fighter in the world, and probably top 10 between men and women combined.
I mean, I would say overall, you could definitely make an argument that I know they made like a woman's and men's pound for pound, which I disagreed with, because it just kind of makes it so much less inclusive, you know, and it makes it seem like that a woman fighter can't be number one pound for pound over a male fighter, which is definitely not true. If you look at Shevchenko's recent resume, you could put her over every male fighter in the UFC right now for pound for pound. She could be number one pound for pound. But if you don't think she could be number one, she could definitely be top five pound for pound across both male and female divisions. That's a fact. If anyone disagrees with that, you got to reevaluate some things. You got to reevaluate what you're looking at in these fights, because Shevchenko's been putting on unbelievable performances in like her last five or six fights, maybe even the five, six, seven fights. So, but nah, if she would only, you know, barely make $500,000 for her, you know, for the Caitlin fight, that's just sad to me. That's wrong to me.
All right, so jump in fast.
Go ahead.
Just. Tiny side note, just for the example, she made $270,000 total with all the bonuses, and who knows if she gets pay-per-view buys, but points, whatever. But just for the example, she made $270,000 for a title defense, while Derek Lewis made, I think, $305,000 just for, like, a random fight against a light heavyweight in Latifi who went up, and it was kind of like a, you know, a hug fest. Just a thought.
Okay. So let me just throw this out here. I mean, you guys can answer with a simple yes or a simple no. We are going into June 2020. Do you guys see this becoming a bigger issue as the year goes by, or will it become a mute point and we all forget about it as the year goes by?
No, I don't think that. I don't think that we're gonna forget about it, because what I'm starting to notice here is that there's a trend, and right now, too. So look at this, right? Whether you like him or dislike him, Henry Cejudo just beat, and I know, Lee, you're going to have you're going to contest this, but if you look at the run Cejudo just had, he beat Demetrius Johnson in a highly controversial decision. But, right, then he beat TJ Dillashaw, he beat Marlon Moraes, and then he just beat Dominic Cruz, back to back to back to back. And then he just retired because – and it's not like, doesn't seem like the direct issue. He didn't present it as the direct issue. He made it seem like he just wanted to retire on top, which is totally valid. Maybe that's what it is. But at the same time, he also said that there was a, he said Dana knows the number that can bring me back. Now, what that says to me is that he became unhappy with the level he was getting to, and then on the other side of it, the pay he was receiving for the history that he was making. And that is happening at the same time as Jones pretty much saying, well, I'm not going to go to heavyweight to make the same money that I just made fighting Dominic Reyes. I'm not going to go to heavyweight to make the same money I made fighting Thiago Santos and Anthony Smith, because that move is not worth the same as a light heavyweight title defense, which I've been doing all along. You can't pay me the same work for something that's actually a much bigger feat. And it's going to be a lot more work, and it's going to be a lot more risk. And I think Cejudo very well could have had the same thought. He moves up a weight class and still only made $350,000 to defend his title versus Dominic Cruz. And that was his second title defense, defending both of his belts. He won the flyweight belt and then immediately defended it, won the bantamweight belt, and then his next fight was a title defense. He didn't try to jump to do something else. He defended both belts right when he got them. And he only got paid $350,000 versus Dominic Cruz. Does that seem right?
Okay. So I'm looking at his earnings. When he beat DJ, he only made $180,000. When he beat Dillashaw, he made $440,000. When he beat Moraes, he made $440,000. And when he beat Dominic Cruz, he made $390,000. The reason that he made over 400 was because he got like a $40,000 fight week incentive pay. So it's kind of, and then he ended up getting performance night bonuses too. So he probably would have only made that 350. Well, he only probably would have made 390 at the most for those fights. And then the fight against DJ, he didn't even crack 200,000.
Right. So, wow. So what I'm trying to say is that I don't think it, with the way that things are starting to all fall, all the dominoes seem to be starting to fall around the same time. You pretty much have two of the UFC's most dominant champions right now, and who are both. Reluctant to fight. One said that he is retired now, and the other one who is just absolutely not going to make the move that, you know, I think 90% of the fan base wants to see him make, which is would be big for the UFC because of improper pay. So Jones could retire too. I'm not saying Jones could retire too. I feel like at this point, what else does he have to prove at light heavyweight? I could see it going there.
It's crazy, man, because it's like, and actually DC didn't make no $4 million unless it all depends on what he got for the pay-per-view, because they don't tell you how much you get for the pay-per-view points. But DC has made, he made five almost $600,000 in his snooze fest against Uzdemir. Then he got $540,000 against Lewis. Then he made $540,000 against Miocic. And he made $590,000 in the first fight against Miocic. So, I mean, I think it's a problem that could get bigger. But it's like I said earlier, man, fighters are individual contractors. And they only going to look out for themselves. They could really care less about the number 25 ranked guy in the division. You know what I'm saying? But always, man, Keys, help me with the young lady name that the UFC got rid of because she was talking about unionizing. And then all of a sudden she was down to Bellator.
Leslie Smith.
Leslie Smith was talking about a union. The next thing you know, they released her. And now she's in Bellator. And the only thing Leslie Smith was saying was the fighters should get medical, lifetime medical and stuff like that. She wasn't saying anything about compensation at the time. But now compensation is going to be probably the main headliner if the fighters do decide to revolt against the UFC.
Well, so I'm going to ask this. Lee, do you believe that Jones, I know you said it a few minutes ago that you think there's no way he asked for the same money that Deontay Wilder got, which I think is absurd to even assume that he asked that. I think that's to say that a guy asked for the money that the boxing heavyweight world champion asked for, like, it's just kind of asinine. It doesn't seem realistic at all. So I don't believe Dana for a second saying that Jones asked for that number, because that's just it's not realistic. I don't think Jones would even value the fight at that much money. I don't think he, you know what I mean. In today's landscape, I don't think he would even say that. I mean, I could see him having asked for like a couple million, maybe 5 million at the most. But I don't know. That seems crazy to me. But Lee or Evan, do you believe Jones or Dana White?
Go ahead, Evan.
It's weird, because I've been keeping up with like the tweets between the two of them and like watching the videos with Dana White. I try to give the benefit of the doubt to Dana White because he does get a lot of shit. Like, he doesn't really get a lot of slack. But on this, for this particular incident, I think Jones, honestly, is telling the truth. I don't want to say dumb enough, but like, I just don't think he would ask for Deontay Wilder money knowing, that he's not doing the numbers that he could be doing or just whatever. So, I believe Jones.
I'm with Evan. I believe Jones too, because normally I think when Jones finds himself in a predicament that he's walked himself into a corner and that maybe he probably can't get his way out of, normally he'll back down and kind of like fade away. But on this one, he seems to be puffing his chest out more and more at Dana White, as far as like, you're not going to lie on me, you being disrespectful. And it's, man, he's been very adamant. And but it's like what you said, Keys, they both got bad track records. So it's like, which of the lesser evils do you want to believe? I just don't believe Jones asked for $30 million, though. I just don't believe it.
Yeah, I think Dana kind of put his foot in his mouth when he told everybody that he asked for what Deontay Wilder got. I think that kind of made him a lot less believable, that he would say that, because that just seems, like you said, if Wilder made $30 million, to fight Tyson Fury in the rematch or whatever, that's just a crazy amount of money for what the UFC's landscape is like today in terms of pay. I just don't see how any fighter would be asking for that number, even for a heavyweight super fight like that. I don't even think. Jones would even believe that that was realistic enough to where he would ask for that. I mean, unless the fighters can get, like, Floyd Mayweather and get Mayweather Promotions to, like, you know, to help out with the budget, I really don't think $30 million is going to be realistic anytime soon. I hate to say it, but it's just not.
I don't know whether or not either one of you guys know this, but is it true that Bellator pay their fighters better than the UFC?
No, it's false. It's false.
If I could, jump in, I have thoughts on that.
It's false.
But the only thing that
it's false. You want to know what happened?
Hold on, Depp.
No, Evan, I can't. I couldn't hear your audio. You saying? Were you saying something?
I just, like, the only thing I know about Bellator is that they allow sponsors. So, like,
Evan, your
money,
mic is really low.
It's really low? It's
coming in really low.
There you go. There you go.
Better. I'm better now?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. I was saying the only thing I know about Bellator with better money is they just, they're sponsors. Because, like, for example, Rory McDonald a while ago made $250,000 just from a sponsor, and the Reebok deal for UFC totaled up from all fighters $250,000. So they make great money from sponsors, but their base pay, I can't imagine, is that good.
Now, I'm going to say this. You know how much they made? So they just had that so Bellator, so I didn't know about the sponsorships. I didn't know how much the Bellator fighters were making from the sponsorship, so that was news to me. Thank you. But I do know that in terms of the base pay, Bellator pays significantly less, especially to their champions. They pay significantly less in their, you know, the headline names than the UFC does. For example, look at Ryan Bader. Ryan Bader is their only double champion, if I'm not mistaken. I think they have another double champion. I'm not sure. They might have one more.
I think
double
the Pitbull
champion,
brother is a double champion.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, but I wasn't sure. So they might have two double champions. But either way, you have, you're technically your baddest man on the planet, who holds your light heavyweight and heavyweight belt. He just won the heavyweight Grand Prix, right? And Ryan Bader was a light heavyweight, so it's kind of like, I mean, Cormier was already a heavyweight. He went down and then went back up. It's different. Bader was actually a light heavyweight and then went up to heavyweight. So he was actually, you know, but either way, you have your baddest man on the planet, Bader, just defended his title versus Czech Congo. You know how much each of those guys made for that fight?
Not a clue.
You want to take a guess how much?
150 or 200,000.
Last time I checked, they both made in the ballpark of $100,000 each for that fight.
Wow.
Absurd.
Which, if you compare that to the UFC, it almost makes it seem it's blasphemous, because if you're a name. Let me think about this. If you're somebody who puts on good fights and that people want to see every time, you're probably making $100,000 already. I'm pretty sure Ngannou just made a lot of money for his Rozenstruik fight. He definitely made championship money for his Rozenstruik fight, and some of the veteran guys are making lots of money. If you look at Alistair Overeem. He just made, he topped the card versus his last fight. He just made $750,000 base pay. Overeem makes $750,000 for his base pay. He's the highest paid UFC fighter besides McGregor. If you really look at it, he's the highest paid fighter, non-champion, besides McGregor on an average basis. Now compare that to Bellator paying $100,000 each. $100,000 for the double champion. It's unfathomable.
Well, you know, man, we could talk about this all day, man. Let's do some quick hitters real quick. Earlier this week, it came out that I think it started coming out last week that the UFC is going to try to make Kamaru Usman versus Conor McGregor for Kamaru Usman's championship. Are we in for this fight or are we out for this fight? And if you in, why? And if you out, why?
So you want me to start?
Yeah, you start.
Evan, you want to start?
I'm cool with whatever.
All right, Evan, go ahead and start.
Okay. So, I just want to make sure I sound good for you guys. So, Conor McGregor versus Usman. So, you know, well, for starters, I can't, like, I have to say, like, I'm against it just because it's, like, wholeheartedly, just, like, I'm a very sport. I want the MMA to be a sport. Like, I want it to still be a sport and not just be the entertainment business. So, therefore, you can't justify Conor getting a title shot. Like, he has wins in the division, unlike Aldo, but we won't get into that. But, like, none of them are offering him a title shot. So, you know, this is just a big money grab, and I get it. It's going to be, if it happens, anything can happen. It's MMA. You know, it's not like Conor's going to get killed. You know, who knows? But for me, I would watch it, but I just don't support the idea.
So, Keith, we're going to lead up to you. Okay. So, I'm not a fan of this fight or the idea. I don't think the fight's really a thing yet, but apparently it's very close per Usman's manager. He said the fight is very close and they've asked for the fight. So it's on the table, but it's I don't agree with the fight. I think it's totally random. I don't really know why we would have Usman versus McGregor. I feel like it's totally random. And I don't know. I just don't really like the matchup. Also, and McGregor really hasn't done anything. Even if I didn't like the matchup, if McGregor had been fighting welterweight and racking up big wins at welterweight, then I would say, okay, it at least makes sense, even though I don't like it. But the fight doesn't make sense in terms of accolades because McGregor really hasn't won any fights at welterweight. I mean, he just fought Cowboy at welterweight, but really Cowboy came up from 155 and really that's not even like a 170 fight to me. That was just kind of like a, let's just do it at 170. That wasn't really like it wasn't like he fought like Wonder Boy or something like that. Like if McGregor had come in and said, I want to fight Wonder Boy and then beat Wonder Boy, then like we would be having a different conversation right now because Wonder Boy is a very legit welterweight challenger. If you beat him, then you're making a stake at the title, in my opinion. Even if he's like number 7 ranked right now, he still was a multi-time title challenger and still one of the best welterweights in the world, in my opinion. But that's not the case that we're living right now. McGregor hasn't fought anybody at welterweight, and he just doesn't deserve the fight. So that's my stance on that.
I'll keep it short. The UFC ranking system is bogus. Basically, the UFC makes fights to get views now. To me, it ain't about the spirit of competition. So all you got to do is look at Peter Young versus Jose Aldo. They basically put Aldo in the top 10 so they can justify him having a title fight, although he's the only one in the division. I don't care if people say, well, he won that fight. His record says he lost the fight. So the UFC now, to me, is in the entertainment business instead of the business of sport, and that's why you see the matchmaking going the way it goes now, because we can sit here and think of a number of fights that we just sit back and look at like, wow, they really made that fight. Everybody know that the bantamweight belt should be fought between Petr Yan and Aljamain Sterling. The only reason I'm not throwing Marlon Moraes right in there is because he lost his last fight to the champion. So, and it's just one of those things, man. It's just, you never know what you're going to get with the UFC matchmaking. I think the thing that made many of us fall in love with the UFC is because they stuck to their rankings and they made the best fight the best. And now it seems like that's a thing of the past. Next topic. We have the Gilbert Burns.
You didn't,
and
say whether
Tyron
Woodley. You didn't say whether you liked the fight or not, though. Was it?
I don't like the fight because I think I don't like the fight because I think stylistically what's gonna happen is, I think Usman is just going to do – he's going to wrestle the shit out of Conor. And if Conor hasn't worked on his ground game, then basically it's just going to be a manhunt fest until Usman either submits him or grounds and pounds him. Now, if Conor can come in and show me he has an improved ground game, then I might be like, wow, okay. But – I don't think he deserves a title shot. Let's make a prediction
Lee.
For the – yeah.
Lee, what if you see the next fight? Now, this is a wild card. This is a wild card, right? What if you see the next fight? This is a wild card. And McGregor comes out, and he shoots for a takedown first round. Not on Usman, but just anybody in his next fight, period.
He shoots
for a takedown.
I think I will fall off my seat. I think the whole world will fall off their seat. Especially if there's a successful takedown.
Yeah.
And then he was to improve his positioning on the takedown. I'll bartender, Papa 12, I need a shot. And I don't even like that shit. But, yeah.
Oh, man.
But real quick, what's the predictions for Woodley and Burns tomorrow? Starting with you, Evan.
Oh, sugar. Okay.
So, Woodley Burns, are we just doing just the main event, right?
Yeah.
I realize, and like I understand, Woodley's technically a big welterweight, I guess, in a sense, because he cuts from like 215 or so, I've heard. So he cuts a decent amount of weight, but he is a shorter guy, and like his torso's not that big. Like when I watch the weigh-ins and the face-offs, him and Gilbert are pretty reasonable in size. It's just Tyron has like big legs, so like, you know. It's a tough one, but I think I'm gonna go Burns. I'm going for the upset.
Wow.
Now,
Keith?
How do you have Burns winning though? By what means?
I think first round knockout. I think the fight's gonna end in the first round.
I really don't
think it's going far.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm shocked.
And like, I'm not even kidding because I put money down on first round knockout for gold.
I mean,
damn.
I'm hurt right now. Hurt my feelings with that, Evan. Hurt my feelings.
God damn. All right, Keith.
Evan, do you know that you're in the presence of the Woodley Fan Club?
Are we?
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Keith
was
unaware that the
Woodley
Fan Club
was active in 2020.
Wow.
We've been 4 years running strong. So,
sorry, I had to sit down.
So my thing is this, right? I think it's a very debatable fight. Burns is like that guy who been kind of like on the outside looking in at all these like top guys for a while, but he's been like pretty much game to fight everybody the entire time. if you just look at all the fights, he's kind of stepped in on short notice and been willing to, like, step up, and they didn't take him, but whatever. He's always been game to fight, and he has a lot of impressive wins. And he's very versatile, too. He has the striking. He has a great ground game. He does pretty much everything. I really haven't – I mean, I've seen so many of his fights. There's really, like, not any – there's really nothing I haven't seen him do besides, like, backpack somebody like Damian Maia. I haven't seen him do that, but not many fighters do that. So, anyways, so I'm going with Woodley. Woodley's going to win. It's going to be a third round TKO. That's my prediction.
Man, I was going to pick Gilbert Burns, but I wasn't going to go out on a limb like Evan did. I was going to say Burns by unanimous decision, but damn, first round knockout. I'm going to stick with my original prediction. I'm going with Burns by unanimous decision. And one of the biggest upsets of 2020. And Keys will be up here crying next week because his boy Woodley will be slowly but surely falling down the rankings and probably will be two or three fights from fighting for the belt instead of, if he beat Burns, one more fight from fighting for the belt. I think if Woodley loses, you will see him clamoring for a fight with Colby Covington instead of Covington clamoring for a fight with him. But I'm going with Gilbert Burns by unanimous decision, man.
Do you think Burns can finish Woodley?
I think Burns could do enough to win rounds, and he might do enough to put Woodley in predicaments where Woodley will have to fight off his back, and we haven't seen Woodley fight off of his back. So I think Burns is that well-rounded. So that's why I say a unanimous decision instead of a finish. But I like Burns in this fight.
You know what, though? I'm confused. What makes you think that Burns can take Woodley down?
Because we seen Usman take him down. And I think Burns is a better – I think Burns is a better – at jiu-jitsu, whereas Usman was just a wrestler. I think Burns could use different ways to get him down to the mat. He don't just have to shoot and take him down. He could use trips. He could use all those types of tricky stuff to get him down.
Well, when you say it that way, I'm listening more. When you're saying it in terms of Burns shoots for a single leg or a double leg, I'm not listening because we've seen Damian Maia shoot for like 25,000 takedowns, and he didn't land one. And he's
but
a lot
Damian
higher
Maia,
level than Gilbert Burns.
But Damian Maia is a one-trick pony, though. Gilbert Burns ain't. Only thing you got to do is defend the takedowns against Damian Maia. Gilbert Burns got hands, too. So you just can't defend the takedown and be safe. Gilbert Burns could fake a takedown and come with an overhand right. Willie,
no,
have
no,
to
I hear him. You. I hear you. Lee, let me ask you this. When Willie fought Darren Till, who'd you pick? Be honest. Who'd you pick?
I picked Willie to win.
I don't remember. I don't know.
I picked Willie to win.
You're changing the records.
No, I picked Willie to win because I thought Darren Till, I never really liked the way Darren Till fight. The way he fights, I really don't like his style. And I just felt that Woodley could dominate him. And plus, Woodley had an axe to grind because me, myself, personally, I think he was coming off of the two snoozer fights with Wonderboy. Well, the first fight was good. The second one wasn't as good. And then the Damian Maia fight was fucking super boring. And I said, I think he's going to come out and actually put on a performance this time. I remember that. So Because what about
okay.
saying he had 1.5 title defenses?
Yeah. I remember.
Yep.
Most dominant champion in the UFC for like 2 years and 8 months.
Oh, my God.
Never forget it.
How can you say he's the most dominant champion at John Jones in his last 15 fights has been title fights?
Yeah, but
I just don't see how you can keep saying it. I just don't see
how you can keep saying it. Where was John Jones during Woodley's title reign? I don't even remember seeing him.
Okay,
was he even around?
Like I said, John Jones has 2 title reigns. His first title reign was just as dominant, was way more dominant than Woodley's title reign.
Yeah, but during that time period, how was Jones more dominant in that time period? He was barely even active.
You know what? We're not gonna have this argument because there's no winning with you when it comes to this Woodley most dominant bullshit.
No,
because...
but look at this, right? If you look at this, right? Now, listen.
Because...
Now, Evan, listen to this, right? If you look at this, right? Who did Jones fight in that time?
He beat Demetrius Gustafson. Johnson was more dominant than Tom Woodley was.
Who?
Next, Demetrius Johnson.
Who?
Mighty Mouse.
Okay. He was... Okay. He wasn't even around. Where was he at?
Mighty Mouse was more dominant. He was still around during Woodley's title race. So don't even try.
You know what? He was there. No, but he was number one pound for pound. I said that many times.
Yeah. But,
I'm going to let you have your Woodley love tonight.
Like I said, I'm going to let you have your Woodley love tonight. But, you know, all right, any last words from Evan? You got any last words for the people, Evan?
Just hoping we get some really good fights and I make some really good money.
I was telling Keys, I opened up the intro to the show tonight, and I was like, normally cars like this, they either go one or two ways. They either live up to what we think, because you look at this card on paper, it looks like a weak card, or it could go the other way where at the end of the year, we'll be like, man, that card they had at the Apex Center was probably top 5 cards of the year. So I'm hoping it's leaning towards top 5, but my intuition saying that it's going to be lackluster.
I feel that.
Well, anybody know what time it kicks off tomorrow?
Let me look it up.
We are looking at, hold on, let's see if I can get it before he gets it. It's 6 p.m. prelims and 9 p.m. main card EST.
6 o'clock?
Yeah, for the prelims. The prelims got great competition on it.
Yeah, I remember looking through that and seeing some good ones in there. I think the Brock Weaver kid is fighting.
He's on the main card.
Brock Weaver and Roosevelt Roberts.
I hope Roosevelt wins.
Yeah, I was surprised actually that they have Brock Weaver at like a really big underdog. I think he was like a +300 underdog or something like that. I was kind of surprised because I thought the odds makers were all in on Brock Weaver when he came into the UFC, and it seems like he's only a couple fights in, and they're already kind of turning the table on him. I mean, Roberts is a prospect too, but I was just surprised it wasn't like a closer line.
All right, Keith, any last words, bro?
Nah, I'm good. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. We got pretty much everything. If you have any questions about what we covered or want to, you know, be a guest on one of our shows, just at either one of us on Twitter, at Lee's Twitter or at mine. You know, we're usually pretty active, so just send us a reply, let us know about anything in regards to the show, and we'll we'll get right back to you. Enjoy the
yeah,
weekend.
Man. Yeah, I don't really have any last words. Like I said earlier, man, to all those people out there protesting on George Floyd's death, be safe. Peaceful rallies should not turn into looting and fires. Peaceful rallies should be holding signs, playing chants, but not turning peace into violence, whereas people can get hurt, people get arrested. So if you're going to partake in the violent part of it, stay home. Let the peaceful people do their thing. With that being said, everybody have a nice weekend. Enjoy the fight tomorrow. I'm about to make me another drink and enjoy my grandkids. Everybody have a good evening. That being said, in closing, live, laugh, love. Live your life to the fullest. Have one good laugh every day. And let somebody know that you love them. Leah Keys, episode 142, signing off. Peace!